Kalamazoo has poets in every nook and cranny. We grow crops of them here. But Marie Balkey stands out from the crowd, not just for the quality of her work, but also because she began to write poetry in her 70s. Can you tell us about that, Marie? How did you get started with poetry?
Well, it's kind of a long story. I have to take you up to where I go in the summer, Northport, Michigan. And they have a summer program. For a month, they have a speaker or a writer who comes in one night a week. And I walked out of there with a young woman I had never known before. And neither of us had thought the program was very good. And she said, "Well, maybe I'm extra particular because I write." And I said, "Oh, what do you write?" "Well, I write poetry." And I said, "Well, where are you from?" And she said, "Oh, it's a town in Minnesota." "Oh, no," she said, "I teach poetry." That's what she said. And she said, "It's a town in Minnesota. You probably wouldn't know it." And I said, "Well, try me." And she said, "Duluth, Minnesota." And I said, "I grew up there." And she taught at the college where I graduated, St.
Oh,
Scholastica.
there you go.
So we were immediately friends. And we walked the beach. And I told her one time I was a frustrated writer. In other words, I didn't write anything, I just thought about it. So she gave me an assignment at the end of the summer. And I did. I started writing and found some like-minded people here. And eventually got into a group, and it was one of the best things I ever did in my life. It
And
just,
at this point, you've been writing longer than probably most of the poets in Kalamazoo. Marie just
probably
celebrated.
since before they were born.
Marie just celebrated her 94th birthday. So happy birthday, Marie.
Thank you. Hard to believe.
And the poetry book that you can find at local bookstores and online as well, I believe, is called One Oar, A Journey with Alzheimer's. And I understand this is a collection that you wrote perhaps to help yourself through the journey of your husband's Alzheimer's.
That's right.
So can you talk to us some more about how this collection came about?
Well, I found writing about it got me through, really. It helped so much. And eventually, I was with this group of people who I'm still with now, and they said, "You really ought to do something with these poems." And I can't remember now who suggested. I'm having a hard time with names, incidentally. So if I pause,
Hey, that's
yeah,
fine. I do too.
it's one of the problems of being 94 years old. Anyway, I did get help, and I put it together, and unbeknownst to anybody, I didn't tell a soul. But I sent it off to Writer's Digest because they were having a contest. And lo and behold, I won the first prize, the international prize. And they couldn't find me. And they finally, I think it was People's Church, somebody at People's Church said, "Well, we know where she lives." And that's how they found me. But I learned about it at 11 o'clock one night. So, and it was. Well, it was one of the big things in my life, really. And
They're wonderful poems, and it's I like the whole look of the book. It's quality
well,
publication here that I and these are your son's photographs
that's
throughout
right.
the poetry, correct? Okay.
And Ann Paulson, whom most people know in this city, is responsible for the appearance of it, really. She helped me with that, and has helped me considerably up to this day. We're friends, and so.
So tell us about your husband so that we can picture him along with your poetry if we read the book. Who was your husband
Well,
outside of Alzheimer's?
after I have to start with radio. As I think I said, I tried to find jobs wherever I could to make a little bit of money for spending money when I was in school. And one thing I did was work at radio stations on election night. And I thought that this was, as I think I've already said this, very exciting place to be. And that's what I wanted to do. And let's see, where am I going from here?
And how you got to meet your husband,
Harold. Oh, yeah. Well, after I graduated from college, I had to go an extra semester because I had really wanted to go away. And so I stayed out and worked a semester. And then I realized that that was just a fantasy. And I was also homesick for school. So I went back to school, and as a result of that, I had to stay in school for an extra semester. And after I finished that, I worked for a couple of weeks at a radio station in Duluth. And that they had another station in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and they were losing a woman there, and they said, "Do you want this job?" And suddenly, almost the same day as they asked me this, I was on my way to Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Wow. Out,
yes, with a strange man. But it turned out to be wonderful. It was a small station, and the town was small. There was a friend of mine I'd gone to high school with, whose parents had moved there, and she was there. So I had friends right away. But this small station, I got to do everything. I was on the air. I wrote commercials. I did everything. Talked to people who came into the station. It was remarkable. And one of the big things that happened while I was there was that the Second World War started. And I've written a long thing about that. But it happened on a Sunday afternoon, and I was in the hotel with a friend. We had some lunch, and we were sitting there, and the bartender was standing over there, and he said, "Hey, listen to this. War is declared." So I went right up to the radio station and listened, and there was just one person up there. It was very quiet because it was Sunday. But that's how I learned about the war.
Mm.
And
was your husband involved with the radio station as
no,
well?
No, he wasn't, but I ate my dinners at noon because I could get them for 35 cents. And I walked into the restaurant one noon, and the sports announcer from the station was in there, and there was this fellow with him. And I said, "Hi, Art." And the fellow with him said, "Who's that?" And that's how it started.
I see.
But the Second World War, of course, caused long delay, and we weren't even in contact for, I think, 2 or 3 years. But
so it was more on the second meeting that it took?
Well, we saw each other, but he enlisted because he didn't want to get drafted. Mm. And he had a very interesting, scary time. He was in India and China.
Wow.
For 3 years at least. But anyway, some of us were antsy too and wanted to get out. The first thing we did was go to, where was it, in Iowa, and work in a munitions factory. Well, that was just horrible. And I thought, I don't care about the war effort. I'm going back. And I went back to Eau Claire. They had not filled my position. They said, "All right, take your coat off and get back to work and don't let this happen again." So I went back to work. But we still wanted to do something. So there were four of us who went out to Los Angeles. And my first job out there was in a radio station in Pasadena, where I really didn't do any writing. I did other things there. and didn't care for that job too much. But it was beautiful. I looked out at mountains, and of course this was wonderful for a kid from Minnesota. And then I was secretary and writer for a man named Art Baker, who was fairly well known everywhere. He was in the movies, and he also had this daily program. He had a writer there who did his sketches that he read, and I wrote all his commercials and answered all his fan mail, which was enormous. And so that was extremely interesting. And I went back home for a while, and then I went back out there, and I didn't go back to work for Art. I became a secretary and a writer at Batten, Barton, Durston, and Osborne, the big advertising agency. It's still there.
Okay.
And that was very exciting. There we had some, well, people who were, you know, well-known in show business. They had a lot of radio programs that I helped with a little bit. I didn't do anything spectacular. But
you did newscasts too, I believe you said earlier.
I did. Yeah. I did, yeah. Not with them, but I certainly did in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. I did everything. You know, I had a cooking show.
Yeah. A cooking show, well, on radio.
Housekeeping stuff. Uh-huh. And the mother of one of my friends said, "You've got to do different things on that program." She gave me a lot of tips about what I should say and talk about. But that job was remarkable. It really was. I had so many good experiences. And Eau Claire was on the way from the east to Minneapolis and St. Paul and Chicago. And a lot of big bands stopped there, and they would play one night. And often they came to the radio station and did a little advertising, you know. So it was, and of course it was very exciting for me.
Was it unusual for women to be in radio back then, or no?
Well, it was mostly men.
Yeah.
It really was.
Yeah.
The person I replaced was a woman. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't know whether she did all the things that I did, but it was certainly a learning experience.
And did you come to Kalamazoo because of your husband? I believe he taught at Western Michigan University.
Yes. After we were married, right after the war was over, and he was going to get his master's first, and so right after, and we had a baby almost immediately, you know, not before we should have had a baby, but we did. So we moved in to student housing at the University of Minnesota, and they didn't quite get the plumbing finished before the ground froze.
Yeah.
And we had no running water. We had these huge cream cans that we had to get water in and carry it across the road. I didn't do that because I found myself pregnant almost immediately. We had Susie 9 months and 3 days after we were married. How our marriage lasted, I don't know, because I was pregnant. He was back from 4 years of war, going to grad school, living in a place where he had to carry all the water back and forth that we used in the house, you know, and deal with all that stuff. So, but we did it.
Of course.
We did it.
And you had three children?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he taught at Western, the English department, was it? Or?
He did, but we were out in Pennsylvania for 2 years, and then he came back and got his doctorate. Mm-hmm. And then we went to Michigan State, and we were there for 4 years. But he was in American Studies, which was brand new, and he was not doing what he really wanted to do. And we had met some friends who taught at Western in grad school, and they kept saying, apply here, apply here. And he finally did, and they wanted him, so we moved here, and he got American Studies started at Western.
Oh, nice.
And it was a good move. We've been really happy here. It's a good place to live.
Alzheimer's is increasingly affecting more and more people, and as these generations tend to live longer, more people are having to cope with this themselves or with family members or friends. Have you found that when you share your poetry, are you getting some kind of feedback from the people who read and hear you read?
I've had a lot of feedback. I mean, I feel humble about the feedback I've had. It's been just very sad.
Yeah.
But it's given me a good feeling about it and made me glad. I was glad, of course, because I produced something that people appreciated and wanted.
Yeah.
But it was the extra dimension of it that is really the thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've had so much response from this book. And as I said, I feel very humble about it.
You started writing this when he was first diagnosed and through. And
I did.
The collection ends with poetry where you're alone.
That's right.
And handling the life as a widow.
Yeah. Well, I began this friend up north. I started telling you about her, I think, that we walked out of the library together up there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know whether I said, but at the end of the first summer, she said, all right, I have an assignment for you. I'm not your friend, I'm your teacher. And you have to have a poem to read for the open poetry reading next summer. And I didn't do anything about it, but then I wrote three after I got back up at the cottage. And we had a gathering later on in the summer, and I read them, and everybody said, hey. So I got a lot of encouragement.
Yeah.
And there's a large writing community up in that area. Mm-hmm. And but my friend Nancy, and she just called the other day and sang me happy birthday on the phone. We see each other every summer, and that's wonderful. Yeah, really.
Did your husband ever have lucid moments when he could read your poetry or understand that you were writing, or were most of these written afterwards?
He was. I don't know what the word is to use about my writing. He was sort of unhappy about it because he was. He felt like he was losing everything.
Yeah,
and I think he felt that this was another thing that was taking him away from me. And we just had a remarkable doctor here. He has retired now and is head of something else here. But he said to me, you have to take care of yourself. You've got to live your own life. You cannot give yourself over completely to this. And I took him seriously. And it caused a little trouble once in a while, you know, because I would get someone to come and stay with him. And it was very hard for him. And it was hard for me, too.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought, well, I've got to do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful.
Oh, I would think so. Writing is therapy, and it can be very
therapy.
Healing and help you work through your emotions
and
stay sane through a very difficult
that's
journey.
That's right. And the group that I'm still with, well, really, Hillberries, Con and Marion, became good friends, and they were some great support. And Di Seuss. Di really encouraged me to write and liked what I was doing, and I learned from her vast. Well,
She's a wonderful teacher as well as a poet.
And still is, but she pushed me. She just pushed me and encouraged me. And so I, you know, eventually sent something out and somebody wanted it. And eventually people said, you should do something with these poems.
Are you doing readings now and then?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had a reading down at the ladies' library
recently.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was very nervous about that because I haven't read for a long time. So I was, but it was wonderful, and you know, everybody was very, very nice, very good.
Are you still writing new material or?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, I am. Good. A lot of what I'm doing now is kind of memoir. Poetry is not coming. I did write one poem during the summer. And I was very pleased about that. Mm-hmm. We had piping plovers on our beach, and they're very rare. And it was very exciting. The DNR came out and they put a shelter, you know, they put strings up around the nest area, and they came to band the birds. And there were probably 6 or 8 of us down there. Very excited about this. And these two beautiful kids, young man and a young woman, they looked around, and obviously I was the ancient one in the group, and they said, after we banned her, would you like to release her?
Yeah.
So they put this little piece of fluffy nothing in my hands, you know, and I let her go.
Oh,
so
how nice.
That's the one poem I've written, and otherwise it's mostly memoir.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear that you're writing something like that, because, you know, you have a rich life of memories, and you mentioned earlier that you even spent some time with Charlie Chaplin. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I had one of the women I lived with worked for the McGregor Recording Company. And it was a small establishment, but they recorded some rather famous people. And now, if I can remember the name of the orchestra. Anyway, I met a man at one of these gatherings. When the band leader came back to the Hollywood area, they had a gathering. And I went with Mary, and I met this man who took me every Sunday to Charlie Chaplin's, where men came and played tennis, and there were a lot of other people there. Mm-hmm. And Una, Charlie's wife, they just had their first baby, and she took the women there up and showed us the nursery, which was probably as big as these two rooms. Mm-hmm. And she also showed us her sweaters.
Sweaters.
Vast closet. And up at the top were these, I don't know, there must have been 100 sweaters there. But it was...
You hear of women collecting shoes, so yeah, she collected sweaters.
Yeah. But that was a very interesting time.
So did you get to know Charlie pretty well?
Well, he acknowledged my presence, sort of.
Okay.
But I was writing about this the other day. I looked at it, and I was adding some things to what I had written about it. And I wrote that all the Sundays that I was there, no one ever asked me where I'd come from or what I did. Mm. You know, it was... They were very much involved with themselves.
Mm. Well,
but he did walk us around, this young man and me. They had acres and acres of land there. And as I said, we sat on a low stone wall and had our picture taken. And unfortunately, when I moved to Friendship Village, I lost two pictures. And one of them was the picture of me
sitting with Charlie Chaplin. Oh, I would have loved to have seen that.
But people were very upset with him because he was not, they didn't think he was doing enough for the war effort.
Mm. All right. And tell us, Marie, 94, and you're so vibrant and you're still doing all kinds of things. What is the fountain of youth? Is it poetry, or what do you do to stay so fit and alert and vibrant?
Well, I have news for you. It has gone downhill the last 6 months considerably, but I know it, so that helps. But things are falling out of my head immediately. You know, I turn around and I'm, if I don't write everything down, like appointments, of course, I'm remembering this. So it's not Alzheimer's. It doesn't make me too happy. But I'm still writing. And we have a little monthly publication out at Friendship Village, and I'm writing for that.
Oh, nice.
I've been interviewing residents, and my Plever poem was in there the other day. So, you know, I'm not sitting around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you read one of your poems for us? Would love to hear your work.
Well, this is one that my group said, let's see, yeah. Group last Sunday said, you should send that to Encore.
Mm.
And this is called Voyeur, and it's really about Harold's Alzheimer's. And it is about our being tourists and looking at other people's lives, you know. And the parade of Navajos begins at supper time in Canyon de Chelly. Beds of their pickups jammed with kids. They check our campsite, watch us emulate their past. I shower where they shower. Small girls watch me dry my hair. In Lancaster County, power lines vanish, clotheslines appear. Our car crawls, buggies speed by. Among bonnets and beards, we move through a store, study lanterns and pump parts, test the heft of an ads. Down at the schoolhouse, white aprons flying, Amish girls jump rope. We stare till our middle child objects. Mesa Verde, a precarious climb. In windswept silence, we belly through tunnels, stoop under doorways, bow beneath ceilings. Spirits yield space as we people their rooms. At the stony edge, we clutch our children and share the family canteen. Alone, today I peer in at the narrow hallway where you pace, padlocked with your tangled brain. All your leftovers lie about. Recorder music, dog-eared and worn, rusty pliers, beach stones with holes. And that photo of you, smiling, perched on the wing of the tiny plane that flew you from Burma to Kunming. You shut your door.
Well, thank you, Marie. Thank
You're
you
welcome.
For sharing your poetry with us, and thank you for talking to us.
You're so welcome.